Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Winter officially kicks off on Sunday. Although, you know, it seems like it's been with us a while now. As the season changes, we try to get News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback in the studio to talk about the weather. And he's here today. If you have a question about weather patterns in your neck of the woods, dew point, jet stream, etc., polar vortex, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 for your weather questions with Radar Reed. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Weather, meteorologist Reed Kisselback, and your curious questions coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback today. Reed is a meteorologist at WNYT. You hear him on these airwaves as well from time to time. He is just a great local resource. He started at NYT in July of 2019. Before that, he was in Utica. He is a Capital Region native, loves to go to area schools and discuss all the intricacies of meteorology. If you have a question, this is a perfect time. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's voxpop@wamc.org for the email. The phone is 800-348-2551. Reed Kisselback, welcome back, sir. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks for having me back.
So we had a really cold, little brief cold snap there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm watching the national news.
All
the national news channels, they made it sound like the end of time. Like, this is going to freeze you to death. And it was not too bad here. It was one night of about 10 degrees.
We get a couple nights of the single digits. It's always really cold, and especially because you don't think of it for this time of year usually, and you don't usually get it for this time of year. So a little bit of shock. But yeah, the national side of things,
it's sensational.
I can always get a little bit of a chuckle with them when I listen. Yeah, because it's a little bit sensationalized. I think it's the one line I always notice is like, oh, millions of Americans are going to be. We're like, well, of course, yeah, millions are going to be impacted by colder temperatures,
right?
But not, yeah, so to that extent.
And then we said, okay, well, that was it. We left the drip on one night on the pipes, and everything was fine. It's going to be warm on Friday.
What gives
there?
So there's a big front. So it's kind of like you get the opposite reaction after all, right? Everything's cold for a while. Eventually, it has to get really warm again for us. So we have a low pressure system that's going to kind of push in from our south, all the warm air from our south. So we're going to see the highs on Friday. It's been trending warmer every time I do the forecast. So I had it at 47 today. Paul Kyle, who just made his forecast for the evening shows, he just bumped it up to 50, which it could very well be the case. But yeah, a warm front comes, the warm front's in place in the morning. So we have all this rain in place, and then a cold front comes through by the afternoon. And that's where we're going to watch a little bit more because it's going to get back to more colder, more seasonal temperatures.
Yeah. You know, barring precision, absolute precision, and bearing in mind that you have to sort of not make a guess, but make an educated prediction about what the temperature is going to be, would you rather, from a TV standpoint, from a viewer standpoint, err on the side of, I'm going to be a little less, I'm going to be a few degrees fewer, or I'm going to predict it's 52?
It sometimes depends on the weather situation. Like, I know also typically in springtime, people are always really giddy to see the first 60 degree day. I'd be more cautious to just put 58 and then have people be pleasantly surprised that it hit 60. Then forecast for 60 and not have us get that. You know what I mean? Because then you get the angry emails and you get things like that.
Do you really get angry emails?
Oh, yeah, you get angry emails for that.
On.
Like, you said it was going to be 60. You're like, I said close.
Right.
Like, we got 58. That's pretty close. So there's that. Contextually, like in this event, I would probably still err maybe a little bit more on the lower end of it because
temper expectations.
Yeah, just a little bit. If it gets warm enough, then it will get that warm. But if not, and it stays cooler like this, then it's closer towards, not that we have a worst case scenario, but it's closer towards the worst case scenario of this would be what would happen as that result.
We are joined today by News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a weather question, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. So I warned you when you walked in Studio A, I was going to hit you with something that's going to blow your mind.
I'm ready.
Mrs. Graff and I were out in the back just seeing how cold it was during that cold day earlier in the week or whenever that was, a couple days ago. And, you know, the apps will say, well, it's 10, but it feels like 2. I assume that's wind chill, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's just stop there.
Okay.
So then she says to me, she says, what is it possible if you're looking at some at your app and it says it's 30, but it feels like 37? And I said, well, how could that be? How could it feel warmer than it actually is? And lo and behold, on our apps today I'm looking at my phone, 30, feels like 39. How can that how can that happen? There's only a certain amount of heat. Calories are coming in.
Yeah, sometimes that depends on, what you're looking at is a computer model, and the computer model is saying that's what it is. You don't necessarily have the current conditions unless if your app is set to, let's say, current conditions at Albany Airport, because that's what we use here locally for verification of everything that goes through. Sometimes you get that from a little bit of a southerly breeze. It can kind of help push a little bit of some warmer air
towards
it.
But doesn't that raise the thermometer?
It should. And it doesn't always work either, too, because the other thing that you need is it's more so of a direct result of sunlight. If it's 30, you might be in direct sun. It might feel a little bit more like 39 if you have the thermometer in that spot.
So if you put the thermometer in the spot with the sunlight, it's going to go up to 39?
It's weird. It's all weird with that. So it depends on what you have, and that's why it's tough to give you a direct answer on that.
It's some kind of bizarre alchemy.
It's a little
we
bizarre.
Can't figure this out. Now, I can sort of figure. I was trying to explain to her.
Yeah.
You've been on many times and explained wind chill, and you know me, I'm sort of listening, and I sort of remember stuff, and feels like is basically wind chill, and it's the wind.
It can
and
also
it's,
be humidity too. So like when you think about it in the summer, we always have. We always have the, I'm losing it today, heat index.
Right.
So you have
so that's
temperature
what we're looking
80,
at?
You have a little bit more humidity in place, and now it feels a little bit warmer. So that's another aspect of
it. Okay, and how do they gauge it? If I'm looking at my app and it says, well, it feels like 37, but it's really 30.
So that's a lot of it's computer model based, where they're like, based off of what they view as the atmosphere is as normal, based on this time of day, this is what we feel it's going to be.
So bottom line, they're making it up.
Sometimes, that's the whole part of weather is we don't know what normal is for the atmosphere. And all those models and equations we look at is just based off the assumption of this is what the model is saying. This is what it would be at a normal. And based off of that, this would be your result.
All right. Well, I'll try to explain that to her, but I don't think I'll do it justice. Do you consider yourself a scientist or an artist?
I like to say scientist.
Really?
Yeah.
But yet there's clearly an art to this whole heat index deal, or it's 31, which is pretty cold, but it feels like 37 because the sun is really extra warm in some spots.
Sun, a little bit more humidity. There's a lot of different factors.
I don't know. The whole thing seems strange. All right, let's take a couple of emails here, and then we'll take a break with meteorologist Reed Kisselback, who once again is already regretting his appearance here on the program, and it's only 12 minutes in. Nick writes, "I feel like the temperature could be anything under 50, but please solve this for us. What specific conditions are needed to see our breath in the winter? Why is it sometimes like a plume of lingering steam? Others just wisp in the air." Well written, Nick.
I like that. That's a good question. A lot of times that has to do with just it has to be cold outside, or you have to have the wind chill that makes it cold enough, like just below freezing.
Right.
And so what's happening when you get the breath is you're breathing out a gas. It's cooling. It's condensing.
So it's like a cloud, right?
It's like
the same thing that happens with clouds?
It's kind of the same thing with what I always say with fog, right? Fog is basically like a cloud on the ground. It just didn't go up yet.
Right.
So it's kind of the similar principle of that is you're exhaling something that's so warm and the atmosphere around it is so cold that it just instantly cools it and you get that.
So what you're saying is Nick is in a fog.
Nick's making fog.
All right. JF, who says, "I live in Hyde Park and sometimes I see thunderstorms coming our way from the west on the radar. Strangely, they often seem to split and go around where we live. Is it possible that the topography of Highland across the Hudson is causing this?"
Yeah, topography is always a big factor when you get severe weather, especially. And it's from the sounds of it, too, if you can see it split sometimes, if it's a severe thunderstorm warning, you can get isolated cells, and sometimes they split and they can diverge away from each other. So that sounds like maybe geographically based, it kind of locally forces it to do that a little bit more frequently than, let's say, in another location in our region.
Mike writes in from Saratoga. I was hoping Reed could comment on the accuracy or inaccuracy of the Old Farmer's Almanac. How do they come to devise their weather reports every year? Every show, we get one of these.
Farmer's Almanac, isn't it, too? I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but I thought I saw an article saying that this is the last one that they're putting
out. Well, actually, there are two. There's the Old Farmer's Almanac, and then there's the, I don't know what the other, the slightly newer Farmer's Almanac. Okay. I don't know what it's called, but one of them's going away.
Okay. Yeah. So to my knowledge, what the Farmer's Almanac does is they guess, have their own equations for that. They use
their secret.
The forecast. Yeah, they don't tell anybody those
recipe.
Ones.
Yeah.
And so based off of that, they kind of predict the winter. They also try to look at kind of just like years past and just go, based on the years past, this is kind of what we're leading with. And so accuracy-wise, you can probably find just as many years inaccurate as you could accurate as you go on through, because it really is just a guessing game on that part. You can try to rely on it, and I think a lot of people can find their ways to, it's kind of like you listen to your own forecast, right? You're listening to your own meteorologist here. You're looking at it, and I'm sure you're not taking 100% of that to account. You're going to make your own adjustments
right.
to it. And so I think if that's the approach that people take, then some people might find success with that and others will not.
So do you listen to your own forecasts?
I do, but I do hate listening to myself talk. So.
You're doing a great job. Let me ask you this before we take a break, and we'll take a break here in a moment. 800-348-2551. Of all the colleagues you have at News Channel 13, who's the best?
Oh, well, no, I'm not.
Everybody's
great. Everybody's great.
You know what? I knew he wouldn't play this game. Riley, let's take the music. 800-348-2551. That's all for Reed Kisselback today. I've had enough. We'll be back. I crazy? That's John Schofield here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Yep, it's meteorologist Reed Kisselback. Winter is officially what? Sunday, right?
Sunday, yeah.
But there's this meteorological winter, right?
Yes.
When did that start?
That starts December 1st. So for meteorological records, it kind of makes more sense to break it up. There's 12 months in a year by 3 months for every season. So
yeah.
December, January, February, winter, March, April, May, spring, June, July, August, summer, September, October, November, fall. And when you look at that too, even like temperature-wise and precipitation-wise, it kind of matches up really well. And that's kind of why we have meteorological seasons and astronomical seasons.
We've already had some snow, at least in my house, and, some ice and cold weather. So it's really, to me, and again, this whole business of perception, back when I was a kid, the snow was up to the rooftops. It does feel like more when I was a kid.
Oh, I would agree with you on that, too. I have a lot more. I do remember a lot more snow events as a kid, but that also being said, I was a lot shorter then, too. But,
exactly.
You expect a lot more snow. But also in that perspective, too, I do remember, looking at my parents' cars and being like, this year it's only up to, around the door. And this year, the years past, it's a little bit higher than that. For us here locally, the average snowfall, which they put out every few decades, a new average snowfall, it has gradually dropped. So there is truth to that.
Right.
In there, when you look at the data.
But it's a 30-year cycle, more or less?
More or less a 30-year cycle,
Because I remember early 70s was when I was a young kid, under 10. I remember one, and I don't know if it was Thanksgiving or what, but the drifts were up to the second-story window of our house.
There's a couple of ones like this. I remember, too, when Bob Kovacic was still working at the station, my uncle had texted me and he goes, "Hey, you're working with Bob today?" I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "I remember whatever snow event that we had." And he goes, where I jumped off the roof and we had that much snow that I just safely landed it. And Bob was like, "Oh yeah." And could just tell everything they did with that one. And so there's a lot of events like that, that aren't as frequent anymore. And this year, obviously we're starting out above average, which is probably more overdue if you think about what we've had for the last few winters.
Right.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's weather with meteorologist Reed Kisselback from News Channel 13. You still on the noon shift?
Still on the noon shift.
Are they making you do crazy hours? I think the last time you were filling in for somebody and doing...
I've been doing a little bit of some fill-in lately. I know, we're getting towards the holidays, right? So Alexa took some vacation with her family. I covered for the last two Sundays, and then I'm covering for Tim this coming Sunday. as the two of them will be covering a lot during the holidays.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to our phone lines. We'll go to Gardner, New York. Kerry is on. Kerry, hello. That did not look good. Kerry's screen went blank. Let's try it again. Are you there, Kerry?
Hey, yeah, I was just wondering how meteorologists can predict wind speeds. And along with that question is just a personal observation that the wind forecasts seem to be very, very accurate. Do you consider them more accurate than, you know, rain or temperature forecasts?
I like that one.
That's a good question, yeah. Kerry. I like that one. So I think they're pretty far up there in regards to accuracy with our temperature and with precipitation, especially when it comes down to, like, timing of precipitation nowadays for us. Winds, we can forecast those from looking at a couple different things. One, we can see kind of like how you always get them in the spring where we get a lot more stronger winds. You can see the difference in temperature between high pressure and low pressure and where it's warmer and where it's not. And when you're looking at the forecast and at our weather models and at the maps, you can see how close those two temperatures are. The closer they are together, when you're looking at a weather map, sometimes you see the maps and there's a lot of lines around them, like a low with a lot of circles around it. Those are pressure. It's just atmospheric pressure. But the tighter they are, the closer they are together, that's a tight, what we call pressure gradient. So a sharp drop in the pressure. And so with that, you get a big difference in the wind. And so whenever we see that in these kinds of events, and you can see that tight pressure gradient coming, we know that we're going to get some decent winds.
Kerry.
Great. Great. And how do you measure pressure?
Pressure, we love our barometers on that one.
So millibars?
Pressure, and millibars is how we use it. Yeah, millibars is what it's always measured in. So if you ever look at, let's say, Albany Airport again, if you went to the National Weather Service and looked at the current conditions, it'll give you the current barometric pressure in millibars. And so if you go from low pressure, you have lower millibar numbers. So
and that
and high pressure
traditionally means more wet weather or storms?
Yes, so you think of it. I always like to say this one when I do my school visits. High and dry, low, and you're kind of sad, or maybe a little bit more slow to get out the door. So you can
low
go
and
low
snow.
And slow, or low and snow, low and rain, a little bit more low in your mood because it's raining outside, and maybe you want to be outside. So those are the ones that I like to use to describe with the kids.
Kerry, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. What's the lowest barometric pressure recorded on Earth?
Oh, I wouldn't know the answer.
Just
to that
in
one
general,
off the top of my head.
Where does it go in a hurricane? Or
in a hurricane, it's impressive when it starts to drop into the 800s. That usually means really tight gradients, really, really strong winds. And we've only had a few hurricanes do that, at least in my career time frame, when we've had some of our stronger ones.
So when you say, oh, there's a high pressure ridge coming over, in general, where are we in millibars?
So when we're saying there's a ridge of high pressure, we're looking at millibars, maybe closer towards 1,000, maybe 1,010. When you get to the wintry weather, you're talking maybe 900 and something. And
yeah. You know, and why is it while you're here? Why is it when the pressure is really high and it's sunny out, I get a headache?
You know, that's one I think you might need to talk to your doctor on.
Come on. All right, let's go to Nate in Great Barrington. Nate, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, so I had a question about hurricanes. I was wondering, why do they turn counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere, but I think they go clockwise in southern?
Yes, they do. That's a good question, Nate. A lot of it has to do with Coriolis force and some of the winds in the atmosphere. So, yes, they do reverse on the other side of the equator because the winds go in the opposite directions when
really?
You go south. Yes.
You know, I've never known. What about the toilet flush?
That's not affected by the wind, right? That's a similar – well, no, it's the same effect, though. Coriolis, and so that does the same. So Coriolis force makes everything go in our current direction that we have up here, and it reverses for the summer of the hemisphere. So Coriolis force is a big part of it. The other part, too, of why you kind of see the weird shape is even though it's counterclockwise for up here, you also have the jets kind of working against it, trying to push it away. So you kind of see a little bit more of a fight. So that's why usually if you were to look at it head on, the left side of it looks a little bit more small and then the right side a little bit more vast. It can depend on what's happening.
In a way like a comet. There's
pressure
on one side.
Kind of like that little bit of a tail. It's kind of getting pushed against it a little bit. And that's why you usually see maybe not necessarily a perfect circle. The really strong ones, you get the really like almost a perfect circle storm in place there. But yeah.
Nate, you want to follow up?
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, no, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Nate, for the call. Now, as far as hurricanes go, before the next call, how was this hurricane season?
A little bit on the underwhelming side. We still had a decent amount of hurricanes. I think for their forecast that they had, they were on the lower ends of their ranges. I want to say they had like 4 to 7 named storms, and of those, maybe a couple, like 3 of those being on the major side. And we didn't really get too much this year. We were kind of what happened halfway through the summer is we started to transition back to La Nina, and that kind of settled things a little bit more out in the Atlantic.
Now, that's surprising. I thought they had predicted a La Nina.
They did, but sometimes La Nina can emerge earlier than anticipated, and so that kind of hit the pause button on the hurricane season for us here, where we usually towards the end of the season is when you start to see a little bit more named storms, and we didn't get them that.
And we're done now, right? When is the hurricane season?
It is June through, I want to say, November 1st. They just changed the date range up a little bit more. They moved it up since we were starting to get hurricanes a little bit earlier in the season, or just before the season officially started. But I want to say it's June through, like end of October.
You know, I go up to the beach. We try to go up the family once a year in the summertime, and we have never seen one up on the Atlantic. Is it rarer to have them earlier, July, August?
It honestly really depends. So July, August, and September is when the ocean waters are typically at their warmest. So that's when you would see them most frequently. And June, a little bit more on the rare side, but waterways have been staying a little bit more warm in recent years, so that's why you're starting to see them pop up a little bit more. But it's usually more on the rarer side. Usually we don't see things really firing up until you get towards late July into August, when the waters are really at their warmest and there's a lot more energy to be used by a hurricane.
We're joined today by News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. The number, if you have a weather question, is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Bob in Warwick. Bob, you're on.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
I was just wondering, when you look on the radar maps and you see a front coming in from the West Coast with precipitation forecasted, is it possible to, by the time they reach the East Coast, deplete their precipitation?
Great question, Bob. Yeah, the short answer to that is yes. And there's a lot of different things that can happen that could change that. Sometimes if you're looking just at a system itself, kind of like in our region, when we are in this kind of cold air, as the precipitation moves over our region and it tries to fall, it's just so dry that a lot of it will evaporate before it reaches the ground. And so sometimes there's more dry air than there really is moisture, and that'll dry some things up. Other times you get a little bit of the terrain in effect. You get a little bit of what we call some upsloping. So all the rain kind of comes down on one side of the mountain, and then it's dry on the other side, and not as much moisture left to even produce another round of showers.
Bob.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for the answer. Bye.
Thanks for the question. 800-348-2551 is our number. We are joined by News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. Before we go to the next call, the weather's it's a common topic of conversation in my house, and we were talking about the differences, and I don't know how many weather shows I've done, all right, but I clearly know nothing. I'm trying to explain the difference between sleet
and freezing rain.
Could you?
Easiest way to do it is you can kind of view it as, you can do two donuts if you want as your example. Glazed donut is freezing rain because you have that icy coating. And sleet would be like a donut with sprinkles on top, the little nuggets.
So they're already hard when
hard when they hit the ground. So difference is it all matters of how much warm air you have in the atmosphere between when it falls and when it reaches the ground. So for sleet, you have a much smaller pocket. So it'll go through, it would melt, and then it would refreeze before it reaches the ground. You get the little ice pellets. Freezing rain, it stays warm basically till you hit the surface, and then it freezes instantly and you get the icy glaze.
Okay, so if she asks again, I'm just going to tell her.
You're going to go to Dunkin' and you're going to get two donuts.
No, I could do that, and I probably, but I'll just say listen to the show on the podcast.
That's a good way to do it, too. Yeah, you can do that.
The number is 800-348-2551, and it's our guest, meteorologist Reed Kisselback. And what could possibly go wrong? Let's go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. You guys were talking about standing outside and feeling 9 degrees warmer than the actual temperature.
Okay.
Let's say it's 30 degrees right now. Sun is shining. We're in a high, so there's not a, it's not feeling moisture. And you're out of the wind.
Okay.
When I do that, sitting on my porch, I say it's 20 degrees above.
Huh.
When you're standing in direct sun.
Can you fill in for Reed next weekend on the show?
Yes.
I think you got this covered, Mary.
I think he could be on News Channel 13 this week. No, I don't know. I don't know, man. So what do you make of all this, Reed?
I mean, I think some of that's just geographic location and where you are. You're going to notice a little bit more of a difference in some spots than others. That's the best way I can picture that.
Merle.
I didn't hear what he said.
Ah,
no?
Well, speak slower, Reed.
I think a lot of it has to depend on geographic locations and variations in that, and that's why you see the difference that you see.
Does that work for you, Merle?
No.
All right, Merle. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Sorry, Merle.
800-348-2551 is the number. Okay, I'm looking at my app now.
Yep.
Not going to say which app it is. It's 32 degrees.
Yep.
Real Feel, 38. Now, Real Feel is a trademark, so you can probably figure that out, but it's the same deal. Come on, man. I'm not buying it.
Some of it's weird, too, because you also have... to add into additional things that can make you feel warmer, too. If you're in a city, it's always going to feel warmer than the actual temperature, too, because you have so much, many more masses of people and just buildings, then they all kind of retain the heat more.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be a little bit, it's going to feel a little bit warmer than it actually is.
All right. Matthew in Rexford writes in, and by the way, if you have a question, give a call, 800-348-2551. Matthew in Rexford writes, why do the prevailing winds blow from west to east? Does it have anything to do with the rotation of the Earth?
Does have a little bit to do with the rotation of the Earth. It also has to do with our latitude, because eventually as you start to drop in latitude, and this is going back into old geography and early atmospheric science.
Right.
This is for me. So I'm not as familiar. I don't remember the latitude off the top of my head. Eventually, though, those winds switch and they go in the other direction as you start to change. So for us, where we are set up in our latitude, the prevailing winds go west to east, but as you were to change and go a little bit farther south or a little bit farther north, then you'll see those winds kind of change direction again.
Okay. Reed Kisselback is our guest. It's weather today, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. One more email here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and do some more. The home stretch with News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. Elisa, or Eliza, in Amherst, Massachusetts, writes, clockwise is the subject heading.
Okay.
Why do people who didn't learn to read analog clocks use instead of clockwise? Oh, what do people who don't know how to use a regular clock use instead of clockwise to understand rotational directions?
That's a good question,
one out,
honestly.
Sherlock.
That's a good question. You know? Honestly, that depends on how we show it on a weather map. I feel like you can kind of highlight the direction it's moving. And so I know for like high pressure the last few days when I've been on air, I've shown high pressure and I've drawn the direction it goes.
Yeah.
And kind of just say, oh, based on its circulation, you can see it's dragging all this cold Arctic air back down into our region just based off of where it's located. And
right.
As this will start to shift off the coast tomorrow, I can probably draw another circle, couple arrows saying, based on its circulation, it's bringing the warm air towards our region.
Have you known anyone who can't look at an analog clock and figure it out?
A lot of the school visits, there's a lot of
No way, you're kidding me.
Yeah, and it's not on any teachers. It's just because we're so used to digital clocks now that you don't necessarily have to how to read. I know, it's a little weird.
It troubles me. Let's take a break, Riley, before I cry. 800-348-2551. Reed Kisselback's our guest. It's weather today. We'll be back. There's Spark Plug from Melvin Sparks here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's weather with Radar Reed Kisselback from News Channel 13 Meteorology. Hey, listen, how many are in the meteorological department over there now?
There are, got to do the quick math in my head here. I want to say, I don't want to forget somebody, so I got to make sure I'm counting myself. Tim, Alexa, Rachel, Paul, Christina, myself, six.
That's a lot.
Good.
Are you ever worried about some of the little kids kind of pushing you out? I get that a lot. I'm scared here. We got some very talented young people. I'm just waiting to get the call.
I mean, there's always, I never am worried about that because I feel like everybody always brings something to the table that you can learn from. And if you're not
tell taking, that to management at
if
race
you're not
time,
taking the time to learn from those new skills, then
you know what?
It probably is the
I'm
time.
I'm not buying it, man.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's way too diplomatic. All right, a couple more emails and then we'll hit the phones again.
Right.
Fred says, I've been out west, and not only can you see the storms coming, but often you can actually see a line of rain approaching. I've never seen this here in the Northeast. Does it have to do with humidity, the terrain, or am I just oblivious when out east? And that's from Fred.
I'd say not oblivious. I would say, obviously, depending on west, if you're talking west and you're out in the plains, you can see for miles out
right.
in the plains. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Here, there's a lot more terrain, and so the terrain can kind of block your view a little bit more. Humidity, I know you mentioned that, too. That can also be a factor as well. If you think about the summer when it's really humid, you get that haze out there.
Yeah.
And that cuts down on visibility a little bit, too. So I think there's a couple factors there that kind of block it a little bit more regionally for us, especially for an area like us that's so diverse in terrain. You're definitely not going to see everything coming all the time.
One of the coolest weather phenomena I've ever seen was right here in Albany. Mm-hmm. We were living across town, and it was raining. And I went out the front door of the apartment and walked about 15 feet, and there was no rain. And then I turned around, and I could see and walk into the rain line back
and forth.
Oh, those
are always great.
That is
so
cool.
I love those moments. Yeah, talk about perfect timing for that, right?
Yeah.
I've had a couple instances of being out live where we go, oh, me and a photographer go, what's that in the distance? And we're like, oh, no, that's the line. And then we got to, like, try to run and get all the gear covered up before we see the rain hit us. But it's always – it's cool to see.
All right, the last email for now, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Gwen writes in, with the warmer weather, we're going to have – will this melt the snow we have now? Areas south of Albany to New Paltz. Asking selfishly, says Gwen.
Hey, I totally get wanting to have a white Christmas. So it's a fair question. I think it depends on how warm we get, how much snow we have, and just how much rain we get in the mix with this too. It's definitely going to melt some of our snow for sure. Whether it's all of it or not is a little bit more of a difficult.
But the
question.
Rain will wash it all away.
Not necessarily all of it. You might see. I know for like at my house, it probably will wash away.
Oh, yeah,
most
my
of
house
it,
too.
If not all of it.
So, I mean, this came up in the newsroom. I was told to quiz you,
yeah.
Mike Wallace style, is it going to be a white Christmas?
See, that one's, if you look at statistics for over our area or the area that I cover on television,
yeah.
For here in like the Albany area, we're 50-50.
Yeah. Because
you're right on that line usually of you can have the cold and you could also have the warmth and things cannot be there. If you go up just a little bit more into the Adirondacks, it's almost always 80% chance of a white Christmas. So. Based off of what I'm seeing, the temperatures are supposed to fall back to near average right around Christmas time. Precipitation chances fall back to around normal right around Christmas time as well. So that puts our average high back down to around the mid-30s. We're going to cool back down to below average again right after our 50-degree
day. How cold?
Back into the upper 20s and low 30s.
That's not acceptable.
So with that, there's going to be some chances for some pop-up snow showers for the next few days. That could give us a little bit more of a recoating after everything melts away.
Given the completely irrational want of a white Christmas by so many people, here's a and you can thank me now. The
I'm
folks
ready
at News
for
Channel
this.
13
I'm so
can thank
excited.
Me now. Cloud seeding. Christmas Eve.
Oh, don't do this.
You get a blimp, you get up there, and you cloud seed. News Channel 13 logo on the side. Bam. What do you think?
Putting the logo on the cloud?
No, on the blimp.
Oh, I was about to say,
you got a cloud seed. What do you put, silver nitrate or whatever up there?
Yeah, and they attempt to try to make some more clouds
it
and
works.
Get it to precipitate. Doesn't always work, but probably wouldn't necessarily work in the favor of the sense that you'd want.
Have your promotion department call
yeah,
me.
Yeah, we'll talk on that.
Let's go to Gilderland. Eileen, you're on with Reed Kisselback.
Hi. I have a question about dew point and humidity.
Sure.
I often see where it'll say that the air is very dry, but the humidity is high. I don't understand.
Yeah. Always when you're looking for humidity purposes of like when we say it's a humid day out, dew point's the better indicator of that. The higher the dew point, the just more moisture we have in the environment. It's kind of tricky for this. So like on a day I wouldn't necessarily use today, but if you look at this time of year, there's times where you can go out and they could say we're at 80% humidity outside and it doesn't feel humid at all. And a lot of that just is that's how much moisture would be available in the environment. But when it's that cold, everything's much more compact together. So it's always a tough indicator. So humidity, if you want to actually determine, it's better to use the dew point over actual humidity outside. The different seasons, you can still have that humidity up to 100%, even in the cold time. And so that's where I think we get a lot of the confusion.
Eileen.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. You're answering questions so concisely that people don't have a follow-up today.
That means I'm doing pretty good. I'm jinxing myself, though.
All right, this will probably be the one. Vincent and Pauling, you're on.
Hey.
Hi.
My question is, way, way back in 1970, when I was in basic training for the Army, this is August, by the way, they used to have something called wet bulb. When the wet bulb was over 90, they wouldn't allow us to march. They would get trucks for us. So I would pray for wet bulbs along with my comrades.
Yeah,
that's great.
I didn't know exactly what wet bulb was, but it was on my side.
What's a wet bulb?
So if you could explain that to me, I'd appreciate it.
I can tell you what a dim bulb is, but I can't tell you what a wet bulb is.
Yeah, well, I...
All right, go ahead, Reed.
Usually when we don't really mention wet bulb on air too much, just because that's, you'd have to explain that.
Is it really? You know about
it
this?
It is a thing. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So this is stuff that when we look at, and this would make sense for the Army, because weather soundings have... We usually use a wet bulb. And that's something you can kind of calculate on the sounding. And it kind of also helps us to determine a couple factors in the atmosphere of what kind of temperature we'll get a little bit later on in a storm event, or even kind of an indicator of just how, for lack of a better term, gross it might feel outside. And so there's an equation for it, which right now off the top of my head, I'm not remembering off the top of my head, Vincent. So I'm sorry on that part. But it is a tool that we use in forecasting that actually helps determine what's going to be going on.
Give me the generalities. What is it?
It's
you don't have to give me the equation.
I know.
I couldn't figure it out anyway.
It's been a long day for me, so that's why I'm like trying to think of the
so
way to
sorry,
phrase it.
Man.
No, you're okay. It's man.
All right.
See, I told you I jinxed myself with this one. Sorry,
you know,
Vincent.
What?
You know, I did.
So the wet bulb. This
goes back to 1970, so I don't know if it's still a thing.
Well, he knows about
it. It is still a thing. It's still a thing that we use, and I'm failing my atmospheric science professors right now miserably for not being able to tell you.
I've scooped Reed Kisselback.
You know
what,
Vincent?
You did good, though.
I'm proud of you, sir. Thank you for calling 800-348-2551, the wet bulb. I'm looking it up after the show.
Do it.
And I'll forget by the next show.
You know,
if we
have one more commercial break, I'll get the answer for you right after.
It's public radio. It's underwriting. There are no commercials,
All right.
Okay, let's go to Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a couple of questions. One comment about the Beaufort winds scale. Now, I've really come to appreciate, I have a little weather app, I won't mention which one, on my phone.
Okay.
And I can look up the day and click it. And it will show me the temperature going up and then down during the day. I can also pull down a little menu next to it, and it allows me to see the wind speed throughout the day. And I'll tell you, it's highly accurate. I don't know how they do it. But here's the question on the Beaufort wind scale. It's a scale that goes from zero, calm, then light air, 1 to 2 miles an hour, light breeze, 3 to 6 miles an hour. All of it makes sense till it gets to strong breeze is 24 to 30 miles an hour. High wind, 31 to 38. Gale, 39 to 45. Strong gale, 46 to 54. And then storm, 55 to 63. And I was a little confused by the fact that somehow storm is after strong gale, which sounds worse to me. How much do you talk about the Beaufort scale with people, and how much do you talk about possible dangerous winds sometimes they'll just say, we're going to have wind tonight. And it's like, should I be worried or not? I'll leave it to you. Thank you.
Okay.
Good
thank
question.
You,
I appreciate it. Yeah, Beaufort scale is something that we'd be talking more so about behind the scenes. Obviously, again, when we're on air, we don't get a lot of time to talk about conditions like that. But that's also where the terms for us, breezy and windy, those differentiations come from. And so gale and storm, I'll tell you the reasoning why you have that difference there. For us to get a severe thunderstorm warning, or we have those kind of severe storm warnings, the wind gusts have to be at 55 miles an hour or greater. And so that's why they have it at 55 and up, even though gale sounds much more ominous than storm, for sure, in some of these instances with wind. But usually when we get that 55-mile-an-hour range anyways, we usually have a storm that comes through with it.
All right, Joanna, thanks a lot for the call. All right, while you were talking to Joanna, I did look up on Google, using the AI, the wet bulb deal.
Love this. All right.
All right. Now, I don't know if it's accurate. I have no idea.
I can confirm or deny.
Wet bulb temperature measures heat stress by combining air temperature with humidity. It's the lowest temperature air can reach through evaporative cooling like sweat. So if it's above 31 Celsius, 88 Fahrenheit, the body can't cool itself effectively, leading to heat stroke.
Which
would make sense if you're marching.
Makes sense.
So it's very similar to heat index in a way, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. It's some of the, we can use the factors of a wet bulb in parts of our forecast sometimes, yeah.
For some reason, I just think that's so hilarious. There's a wet bulb. Hey, Richard, you're on in Rensselaer. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm glad that someone else was complaining about the weather forecasting being too quick the last time I heard you on Vox Pop. But I want to know about, with the very limited amount of time that you have to give your whole weather report, there seems to be a lot of time spent on current temperatures, and I don't understand how you meteorologists, I haven't studied you, but in general, the local meteorologists, how do they pick which of all those temperatures you're going to tell us about?
You mean geographically?
Yeah, do you mean like...
Yeah, they'll say it's 31 in Lenox, 30 in Hudson, 34 in Schenectady, and then 31 in Troy.
Okay.
And they got a whole bunch of cities up there, but I don't see any reasoning as to which ones you pick out.
Gotcha. It's a fair question. So, I mean, for the record, all those cities and spots that you see are from weather stations that are around the entire state. So that's where those spots pop up from. In regards to picking them, sometimes there is a reason for picking those spots and saying them. Other times there's not. I know sometimes a lot of meteorologists try to pick some spots with a little bit more population to them to say them out loud. Typically because if you have a higher volume of population in those spots, maybe somebody can't see the TV as well. So you just want to say that temperature out loud so they can hear you. Other times it's, probably on this Friday might end up being a good example. I'm sure at some point on Friday when this cold front comes through, I'll be able to point at the temperature in Pittsfield and tell you it's 40, and I'll be able to point at the temperature in Amsterdam and tell you that's 25. So sometimes I'm using that to kind of illustrate the difference of just how cold it's getting behind a system that's coming on through. Other times, let's say it's a nice, sunny, quiet day, it might honestly just be the first temperature that they see on the map, and that's the one they're pointing to, and that's the one they're saying out loud. So hopefully that answers your question, Richard.
Does it, Richard?
Well, I haven't really seen any pattern to it. Even talking about the extremes, it seems to me like the extremes would be the ones you'd use. But and when I say you, I mean the general. I'm
right.
No, I got you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, Richard, thanks a lot for the call. What I like to do when I do my 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. or 11 news, I take four different geographic spots. Albany's always the last one because that's our main trend. Mm-hmm. That's where our main studios are. But I try to go north, east,
west.
Yeah,
you try to want to show, you highlight your region a little bit.
And then If I can work it in, I try to find names that I like to say, like Speculator.
There you go.
That's great.
Yeah.
Jericho, Vermont. Or weird ones, right?
Yeah.
Satan's Kingdom in Vermont. or one of those weird, Purgatory Chasm or strange.
Sure.
So that's really how we do it here, but it's not as scientific as what you do.
And sometimes it's just what you see, and all of a sudden, you're up there, everything that you're saying is coming out of your head off the top. You're not reading a script. So some of it, too, is you're trying to think about what you're saying next, and then you're like, temperature in, and you can
you're
just
looking
to the
at
next
the screen,
spot.
Yeah.
So sometimes you catch yourself in that moment, too.
Why don't you just say this? temperature in, you hold your hand out and say, pick your own place.
I'll do
folks.
My best, Vanna. I'll just display the whole board.
Bo writes in, what happened to the old weather balloons? We used to see them reflecting the sun way up there. Are they still in use?
I don't know about what would make them. Yeah, so contextually,
I mean, they're
speaking,
still there, right?
They are still there, yeah. So they launch balloons still pretty regularly. Might not be seeing them. I know the Weather Service in Albany has also moved a little bit, and they're where they do the launches now are from a little bit more of a higher elevation. So it might just mean that difference in elevation kind of makes it a little bit harder to find.
But it's
still going on.
Yeah, to be clear, these are still a part of your daily information.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They still do them pretty regularly.
And how do they work? I mean, is there a network of these? Are they all set up across the country to go off at the same time and give telemetry that then feeds into a central spot?
Yeah, so there's a set amount, I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, of Weather Service offices across the country that will do a balloon launch. And when they do the launch, they usually do one right in the morning, just before sunrise, and they'll do one closer towards sunset, just to kind of gauge the current conditions in the atmosphere. And that comes in at all that data comes back right around the time that the models go in to update. So they'll go and they'll grab that information. They'll incorporate it into the models as like your starting point for the equations. And then your end result is based off of how the atmosphere is here. This is what we project will be the forecast for the rest of the day.
Okay.
Based off the other locations.
And before there were satellites, there were weather balloons.
Yes.
And now there are both. What can the weather balloons do that the satellites cannot?
So, I mean, the weather balloons give us the current conditions. The satellite balloons.
What are the conditions? You mean temperature, wind speed,
yeah,
barometer?
Temperature, wind chill, you get barometer, you can get wind direction. It can tell you a couple other variables of things in the atmosphere, kind of like something that we call CAPE. We can use if there's a decent amount of CAPE. It usually helps us know that we're going to have some severe thunderstorms later. So that there's other things that we don't bring up on air. But they're there for us to use to kind of really digest what is the potential of the atmosphere for the day. And so there's those factors in there. Satellite is great because you can see what's coming your way. And you can see based off the trend of how it's been acting, how it should be reacting by the time it gets towards your area a little bit more too.
Well, and the other thing I wonder about weather balloons, and they've always fascinated me since I've been a kid. There's a box, it's a payload, right? And so it's some sort of equipment that sense
radios on is what
okay
they call
it's a radios
yeah.
on
yeah
what happens now I know that there's allegedly a tag on the thing that says if found return to blah blah blah. First of all, how heavy are they? Have they ever killed anyone? And and also, I mean,
it's a fair question.
Yeah, what if you don't take it back? Are you under arrest? Can people find you?
So no. I mean, there's no GPS tracker on it.
Okay.
I think at the end of the day, you lose more of these than you get back.
Yeah.
But there's been stories from Albany when I was interning there in college where somebody in Maine found our radios on.
Oh, really?
And they mailed it back. Yeah, it landed in their driveway.
How big are these things?
They're I want to say probably like a small post office size little box to them.
Okay, so are they very heavy?
They're not very heavy. They have a little bit of weight to them, but what happens too is when the balloon pops, they have a parachute attached to them. So they're not falling at a heavy speed. They're just falling with a parachute. And then
They have a parachute.
Yeah, they have a parachute.
Oh, so they're not going to kill
them. So if you ever look at a weather balloon, have you seen a weather balloon?
Of course, I see them all the time. So I think they're UFOs. I'm up on the roof looking. There's one now. Yeah.
You see the big balloon, you see a little bit of a line, you see kind of something sticking out a little bit, and then more of a line, and then the little radio's on. That little middle thing is the parachute.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Reed Kisselback, this was one weird show as usual. Hey, man, when are you on TV again?
Back on again tomorrow, live at noon. To be determined when I go back to the station today if I will be out in the 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, really? All right,
yeah.
Well, News Channel 13 is the place for Reed Kisselback and all the other 37 other meteorologists who were there. Hey, man, we'll see you comes, I guess, springtime, right?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
We'll see you then. Support comes from Bennington Museum, presenting New Year's Eve Party for Kids, Wednesday, December 31st from 11:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m., benningtonmuseum.org for more information. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect, daughtersofsarah.org. And Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, announcing the new Flower and Arts Barn, featuring garden gifts, plants, handmade pottery, artisan crafts, and more, balletflowers.com.
for details. Thanks again to News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Great calls. Merle, you were spectacular today. Thanks to Riley Phillips, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Travel with Gene Gagnon. We'll see you at 2:00.